The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. Coming up, we reflect on Tuesday night's Mercury Music Prize. Miranda Sawyer gives her take of the evening, and her and Tim Jones share their favourite new tracks in Singles Club. And we have an exclusive live track from Laura Marling to celebrate her new album. That's all to come in today's Music Weekly.
The winner of the 2011 Barclaycard Mercury Prize is PJ Harvey.
More album, let England shake.
So, for the first time in its history, someone has two Mercury Prizes, and that someone is PJ Harvey.
This record that I've won tonight with is largely about the wars that we're involved in, contemporary wars, but also I wanted in a way for it to be timeless because we've always been involved in wars. But I think that the greater urgency that I've felt to write an album like this now is because of the result of what has happened in the last 10 years. This was something else again. Already, my work's begun to develop into what will be the next project, and I'd like to go even further into what I'd begun with this record, and I was writing in a very different way to what I'd ever written before, working largely on the words for a long time in advance and trying to get them to work in a strong way for themselves to begin with before even thinking of music. And that actually served me very well, I think, with this record. I ended up with a stronger body of work for it. So, yeah, I'm already writing and moving towards wherever I'll be heading next. What if I take my
In the studio to help digest the results is Miranda Sawyer. Miranda, you were there last night.
I was, yeah.
Did you enjoy it? You were covering it for the telly, weren't you?
I did, yeah, yeah. We kind of do a bit for half an hour. We say one sentence on each, yeah, you know, on each album, dismiss it or, you know, rejoice in it and then move on. I really like going to the Mercury Awards because if you go to something like the Brit Awards, it's a massive kind of fandango and you're always miles from the stage, yeah. And it's, you know, and it's kind of it's like it's very showy, it's very cabaret, sure. Whereas if you go to the Mercury Prize, one thing that's good is everybody plays, so they just play one song and you may change your mind about them, which I did. I'm not a huge fan of Metronomy, mm-hmm. And they played and I thought, oh no, you're actually quite good,
yeah,
so
absolutely.
I enjoy that, and it's quite friendly and low key, and mm-hmm. I was really happy that PJ Harvey won. I actually punched the air. How pathetic,
wow,
is that?
Amazing.
I punched the air.
How rock and roll. I think everybody's happy that PJ is. I mean, I'm sure there'll be people on the blog, you know, quick to correct me, but it seemed to be a bit like when Elbow won,
yeah.
But kind of more so because PJ Harvey, long career. You know, the Mercury Prize is famous for giving the award to bands that seem to just be abducted by aliens the minute they finish their acceptance speech.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like when Pulp won it, didn't they? Won it and they won it jointly, didn't they? And Jarvis,
jointly? Who won it with?
It was with that Help album. Do you remember?
Oh yeah.
And Jarvis was kind of, he was really worried about it because he basically thought that after they'd won, mm-hmm. that was it. They would never make another record. Mm-hmm. It was like the curse of the Mercurys. But the thing that's good about the Mercurys is because they've been going on for so long now. Then of course, you know, you can't just give it to debut albums.
No.
And people, you know, people make other records. They're allowed to make other records, and they're allowed to improve. You know?
And that's the thing is that it tells you more about the music business at the moment, or the state of music at the moment, than it does about PJ Harvey. That it seems a bit odd that somebody's reaching what is without doubt an artistic sort of peak in their career, 20 years into their career. You know, that you said, wow, you know,
she's
this is just crazy.
Allowed to do it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's had a contract for that long with the same label.
Also, I think what's interesting about the Mercurys is, speaking of somebody who's never judged the Mercurys, you don't really know what they're awarding it for, right?
No.
So
no.
I think, okay, are they awarding it for just a really great album, right? In which case, you know, you could argue that someone like I mean, I wouldn't argue, but you could argue that Adele should win, right? That is a couple of absolutely massive songs on that album. Or are you trying to kind of do a snapshot of Britain? In which case, you could kind of argue that it's not PJ Harvey, it should be Katie B, or actually James Blake. Except you can say, okay, it is because it's protest songs and it's the state of the nation.
That's the thing. That's the thing that struck me last night after a couple of glasses of Flinty White to the good. I was listening to the PJ Harvey album again, as I'm sure everyone, the minute the Mercury Prize winner is announced, flocks to their stereo to listen to the album again. And I was struck by, this is an album about civil unrest. It's an album about kind of cities ruined by rioting. It's an album about England in decline,
and it's about politicians sending people to war, murdering them.
Yeah, and this came out in February.
Yeah,
whoa, spooky.
She's amazing. I mean, I listened to her on the radio on the day after, on the Today programme, and they had an interview with her, and they asked her, it was Colin Montgomery, and he asked her, "What do you think about the riots?" And she said, "Well, I'm not surprised." She's amazing, calm, PJ Harvey. Mm. She's like, exactly how I would like to be. Not necessarily that spooky, but that kind of, you know, very calm and measured.
Yes.
And she said, you know, well, I'm not surprised. It's kind of, it's as though England has been smouldering for quite a while and it just burst into flames. And I thought, you are so clever. I love you. I love you, PJ Harvey. But it's true, you know. So she, you know, she just said she wasn't that surprised. And so he kind of said, you know, as you do, so you're going to be writing about the riots, you know. And she said, well, I don't know. You know, I've got no idea. Mm. But it took her 3 years to do the album.
Wow.
She interviewed loads of people who'd been to Iraq and Afghanistan. She interviewed loads of soldiers.
Man, that's dedication, isn't
she's
it?
I mean,
that's
she's
brilliant.
A proper artist. And the reason why she made the album how it is, which is, you know, I think that sometimes if you read about that album, you think, oh, it's going to be a protest song in the kind of manner of Billy Bragg. And it's not like that. It's much more timeless. And the reason why it is timeless, she said, is that when she interviewed these people, she realised that what they were going through and how they felt about their own country at home and how they felt about what they were doing was exactly the same as people did many, many years ago
in the
history.
Yeah.
So it's their kind of themes that come through all the time. And that's why it's a very timeless album, that why she refers to old wars as well as kind of contemporary. You know, it's nothing as direct. You know, when you say protest album, you really think, you know, oh, it's like bring down the government.
Yeah.
And it's not really like that. It's much more oblique and human and tragic than that.
Yeah, and reflective, yeah. Do you think, looking at the Mercury things, you think, well, there's somebody there that kind of, you know, PJ Harvey's album's done well, it's been critically acclaimed, it's probably sold as much as the PJ Harvey album is going to sell already, blah, blah. Is there anybody there that thought, oh, they could have really done with that leg up?
Was
there anybody looking a bit threadbare?
Well, King Creosote a little. I mean, you know, that album, people really love that album. You know, I mean, I remember on The Guardian when they kind of put up a thing about, you know, which album do you think should win? And there was the amount of love for that album. I was quite overwhelmed by it. You know, people really love it. And there's something about what he does, which is, you know, he works in Fife. He kind of basically keeps the Fife music scene
single-handedly going. Yes,
you know, and he's a long way away from what you might consider to be the centre of you know, the music industry. And I think he feels perhaps a little overlooked constantly. Mm-hmm. And maybe it would have been nice for him.
Not much sleep tonight and a very early start tomorrow.
Yeah, we play in Glasgow tomorrow night. So.
We've
got a 10:30 train from somewhere in London.
Houston to. Yeah.
Good planning on the part of whoever books that one.
Well, I think when the tour was booked, we were certainly not expecting this to be coming the day before it, really.
So, yeah, we either start this tour as Mercury losers or we start as Mercury winners. I think losers, eh?
Losers. Let's go with losers. What are you saying?
We're going to Scotland. They hate winners up there. We'll get booed off.
That's a Guardian reporter, Rebecca Nicholson, discussing the travel arrangements of King Creosote and John Hopkins. I think that's a brilliant album. We talked about this on the podcast last week. I brought a track in it and a track from it in, and we played it. It's one of those records that I kind of ignored for a while, partly because old King Creosote's output is so torrential.
Yes, don't know which one is going to be
40
really
albums
super brilliant
he's put
one.
Out.
Yeah.
And you know, with the best will in the world, nobody's that good to put out 40, you know what I mean? And it's all going to be amazing. 40 albums in like 10 years or whatever it is that he's done, 15 years. And it is an amazing record. And you kind of hope that sort of a bit of the reflected glory of the Mercury rubs off on it, and people see the performance on television though it wasn't shown on you know.
Yeah,
the
I mean,
I think
what's interesting about somebody like King Creosote being nominated is that if you do listen to that album, it's a very beautiful. I can't imagine anyone disliking the album. Actually, it's pretty brilliant. But what is also amazing about it is it's incredibly specific. So, you know, it opens up with kind of the noises of, you know, him talking to somebody on a till, and you can hear a kid talking. But that kind of specific Do you say specificity? I can't say that. You know,
specificity.
Anyway,
people that kind know of, what we mean.
That bit means that it's completely universal. So it reminds me of, you know, when you hear an album from the deep south of America, and it's a very small town album, and you think that actually has nothing to do with me, you know, brought up in the suburbs, I live in London. But it's absolutely does, because it's universal themes, and that's what that album's like. It's really specifically about a very small place in Scotland, and so therefore everybody can relate.
Absolutely. Do we feel in any way sorry for Gwilym Syncock, the jazzer?
Well, I kind of did. And then he played. He was amazing. He took his moment. He came up and he looks really... He doesn't even look jazz. He looks like he drives up and down the motorway selling you insurance, right? He looks like kind of Alan Partridge, but younger, right? So he doesn't look jazz. He comes on, he plays... You know, the album is entirely piano music, and it's quite a joyful album, and it's very kind of positive. He plays incredibly positively. It's rhythmic, it's tuneful, it's pretty good, and people stop and listen, which is quite hard for them. And then he hops over the top of the album and starts bashing the strings to the keys, like proper whacking them, and making a really good, not just whacking them in the way that, you know, you or I might, when we're a bit angry with the piano, make no rubbish noise, make beautiful noises out of it. It was a really, it was like a proper punk rock performance. It was great.
I think the thing that's worth pointing out is when people talk about the tokenism of the jazz nomination for the Mercury, and, you know, there's no doubt that it is tokenism, and I keep thinking sooner or later they'll give it to just to shut people up, they'll give it to a folky, they'll give it to a jazzer, but no, you know, they're clearly not going to do that. Courtney Pine once told me that the average British jazz album, if you sell 3,000 copies, 3,000 copies, terrible. People like are freaking out about how amazing your sale is.
You've become Adele.
Yeah, you are the Adele of jazz. So any sort of bolstering of your sales, exposure. Eliza Carthy once said something very similar about folk music. So so don't feel sorry for them on the grounds of that.
No, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I suppose you feel sorry for them because you always think they're never going to win. And also, even, you know, when we talk about it on the telly, the people, you know, that talk about it, myself included, are not jazz experts. Right. I don't know enough about it. But what I would say about that album is it's a really accessible one. Sometimes when they have a jazz album, I feel like it literally feels like a kind of ear being sewn on the back of a mouse. I don't get it.
No, I just don't get it.
Yeah. And that one I do. You know, I would play it to my dad who's a jazz fan, and it's easy to access.
That's,
you know,
kind of the sort of jazz because the band I discovered recently that had been nominated for Mercury and I'd completely ignored them because they were the token jazz act, the Portico Quartet, who are amazing.
Okay.
They're a bit like they're kind of like a jazz version of the Penguin Cafe Orchestra or something.
Oh, great.
They're genuinely brilliant. I heard a track. There's a radio station you can only get down in Brighton called FIP. It's a French radio station that somebody apparently alleged to have built a transmitter somewhere in Brighton so you can pick it up and da da da. And they play wildly eclectic range of music, play lots of jazz and da da da. I was having one in the car. And I heard this thing, and it's like, this is amazing. And it's the Portico Quartet.
Have you ever
called
seen
Lime.
Them play or anything?
No, they've got some weird kind of steel drummy sort
Excellent.
Of instrument.
That's what you want.
This is all good stuff. Look, we've got Guardian reporter Rebecca Nicholson, as we said, was down on the scene. She was another person, I guess, that deserved the exposure. Ghost Poet, who we've had on the podcast before. Again, a really good album. The kind of British rap record to quite a long way away from what Tiny Temper does, and the kind of thing you could imagine people who might be interested in the Mercury would like if they heard.
Yeah.
You know, here is her incisive interview with the man himself.
It's great. I'm looking down the carpet, seeing everything, and Elbow and Katie B and Slack. I'm part of this.
How are you finding the red carpet experience?
I'm liking it. It's a very good texture. You know what I mean? Like, my shoes glide on it very nicely. So
I thought it would be flimsier than it is. They've actually...
It's a good... I don't know what the word is for, you know, when it's a certain thickness, but
like,
it looks
yeah.
thick.
Like a closely trimmed shag pile.
You could say that. You could say that.
Well, you know, bringing you the news that matters from the Mercury, Rebecca Nicholson there. Pile is the word that I think he was looking for.
So Ghost Poet.
Ghost Poet.
Right?
Sorry, yes, let's not talk about carpet. Let's talk about
music. I listened
to
that album and at first I thought, oh, it's all right. It's a bit like the mood is always quite similar and the tone is quite similar. And then after a while, like sometimes with albums, I don't know, maybe I'm just a singles person, I find them quite hard to listen to all the way through. And so I just thought, I'll just pick a few tracks. And the lyrics are really brilliant. Like, Cash and Carry Me Home, that's a great description of what a hangover actually is. It's really great. And then there's another one, Survive It, in which he kind of describes what he's going to, what he thinks it's going to be like when he's 44, which is exactly my age. And it's amazing. He's like, he's 20 years younger than that. And he's basically imagining what it's like to be 44 and you didn't have kids and you're still doing the same thing and it hasn't really succeeded. And what will that feel like? It's a really great piece of writing. It's fantastic.
That's an amazing thing to write a hip hop
really
track about.
Great.
That's brilliant. Check him out if you haven't heard him, Ghost Poet. You punched the LMPJ Harvey one. Who else would you have liked to have won?
Well, I quite like Katie B's album. I was when I was talking about it on the telly, Lauren and I was on there with Lauren Laverne and Sean Keaveney, and they looked like they were a bit like, what? But I really like that album. I love
it. It's a great record. I mean, it was widely critically acclaimed.
Yeah, I think it's very good.
When I wrote, Lights On, or I wrote Kate and the Mission, I wanted that to be a tune. I wrote it for the club, really. You know, when I heard that, the beat that Ben gave me, I thought it was like a kind of proper dance floor feeling. I didn't think it was a, this is sound good on Radio 1 feeling. It was that, And I had a lot of fun writing it. I just wanted to write about my experiences of how I feel when I go out raving.
Okay, so finally, was there anybody else you should be discussing?
Maybe James Blake. What do you think about it? Yeah, he did a good performance.
Yeah, a bit of a James Blake backlash, though, isn't there?
Oh, is there? Oh, poor lad.
Pub step, somebody
called
it.
People are so horrible, aren't they?
I know.
He did a really good performance. So basically, obviously he's incredibly sonically obsessed, isn't he? So he's there kind of, making kind of fiddly noises and then gradually just got louder. And he did that kind of wall of sound thing, like proper, like, let's try and annoy the audience kind of thing, which is I respect.
Were the audience appreciative, or were they all...
The audience, I have to say, the Mercurys have got a bit politer, haven't they? So there's absolutely nobody, there's no Liam telling everybody to naff off or whatever, and, there's not even the Arctic Monkeys or anything like that. So everybody was incredibly polite, and the audience responded in a kind of incredibly polite manner. But I think that, they enjoyed the performances. I think the only thing that didn't work with performances was that Tiny and Katie B... Both of them kind of did weird versions of what essentially are dance tracks. So Tiny did a kind of stadium rock version, and Katie B did a slightly
Don't do a stadium rock version.
He's been playing too many
gigs,
festivals.
I know, and also it's just that there's that thing that
the
big, rappers
heavy
do.
Drums, yeah.
Big heavy live
Pretty
drums,
cheesy,
guitar,
yeah.
Da da da. Don't do that. It's not what nobody wants to hear that.
I know.
I wanted to hear that, I'd listen to Limp Bizkit.
I know, but he's young.
He's young, but yeah. I also think of all of the people that perform live at the Mercurys. Urban artists, rappers, dance acts have it the hardest because, without a shadow of doubt, it's not the natural environment for any of this music, but it really isn't the natural environment for hip hop to be performed to in the basement of a Park Lane hotel to a bunch of drunk music industry executives who normally, in my experience, greet the performance with a pretty uninterrupted stream of chat.
Yeah.
This is not going to get people going. It's not going to get, they're all waiting for their bit of tepid salmon en croûte.
It was actually quiche.
Was it?
Quiche. It was a nice quiche. Cheese, as I recall. Cheese. Lovely cheese quiche.
Good stuff. Yeah, well, that's it, the Mercury Prize. Well, anybody out there, who do you think you should have won? Anybody disagree with the PJ Harvey victory?
Come and have a fight.
Come and fight Miranda. Leave us your thoughts as ever on the interweb. Okay, Tim Jones has joined us. You were also at the Mercurys last night. Did you have a good time?
I was blogging it again on a laptop, which was kind of balanced on my knees, where I was kind of sat in a little tiny corner on the balcony.
A simple yes or no will do.
I want to tell my sub story. I told it all last night for about 5 hours, but it's not enough.
A positive reaction from the Guardian commenters. Were they into having it live blogged? They like it.
People liked the winner, I think.
I think that's
the
winner. Yeah, we would.
But maybe it was a bit boring, the fact that everyone thought she was going to win. So. There was a bit of anti-climax.
That's the one thing they didn't have this year. I kind of wish they'd go back to throwing a total curveball and nominating. Well, not in Speech to Bell, but like when they used to have, just someone rubbish. You know what I mean? They would have a nomination. There would be kind of like a genre of music they were trying to represent, and they totally picked the wrong person to represent it.
Yeah, do you think it seems a bit worthy now?
I think the problem with it seems that, this is my big problem with this year, is that it just seemed like critical consensus music, and it didn't tell me, or indeed anybody, with Gwilym Simcock aside, didn't tell me, or indeed anybody who's kind of a bit switched on about what's happening and reads the reviews and that, anything new.
Yeah.
And I would just like the Mercury to occasionally just nominate someone. What?
Yeah.
What's all that about? Or that you'd never heard of, or that they dug something up that was there's a bit, you know what I mean? But can't argue with the winner. Anyway, let us move on. Let's move to Singles Club. We're going to play some new tracks, as ever. Three, we've brought one in each. We're going to start with my choice. That's I Don't Want Love by The Antlers, forthcoming single by The Antlers. I brought this in because I keep sort of vacillating over The Antlers, so to speak.
Don't want to know what you do.
The privacy of my own boudoir. The Antlers have received an unbelievable, I think, level of critical acclaim. If you look at like 8 out of 10 from Pitchfork, 8.6 or something out of 10 from Pitchfork, and The Quietest and people like that are really behind them. And I put the album on, it's called Burst Apart, and in my initial reaction was, if this was Snow Patrol's new album, everybody would be saying what a pile of shite it was. But then, as so often happens with me, I came to mock and stayed to mock. I listened to it more and more and more. And yes, there is a depth and an element of intrigue and a very strong emotional pull about a lot of the songs. And I was just intrigued to see what other people thought of it. Do we think this is basically, you know, a kind of mainstream stadium rock album that's being presented as something other than what it is? Or do we think it's kind of good stuff? Tim, are you an Antlers?
Well, I always ignored them because they were one of those bands where, because they had Antlers in the title, it's like Crystal Antlers, Wolf Antlers, all these Antlers
Wolf
bands.
Antlers?
I'm kind of making
are
up.
Are you? How many Antlers bands?
There were loads of Antlers
bands. Adam and the Antlers?
And they're all from Brooklyn.
Are they?
Yeah, it's like all the Crystal bands and all the, you know, there's these certain words. So these merged into one for me, and then I heard this today, and I thought actually it's all right. It sounds like Snow Patrol, like you say, a bit like Coldplay.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I don't know loads about them, but when I heard that, I did think that's just a kind of, this is our light as a loft song. Mm. We want you all to be weeping. It's really mainstream. I mean, I just, the only thing that's slightly different is the vocals are slightly different, but generally that is a Coldplay song.
But the vocals are still in that kind of post Jeff Buckley, what I mean, soaring into the higher registers.
Yeah, and it's got that. I have to say, I didn't really like it. Right, well, maybe it'll grow on me. But it's got that awful drumming, that kind of doom. That kind of slow, this is our anthem drumming, which drives me mental. So it's a bit, it's not my kind of thing. I can't ever imagine putting it on. Like,
it's a strange thing in that there is, I should say, that there are kind of other qualities to the album that are perhaps not evident in that song. They've obviously chosen to put that song out as a single for a reason. And there were moments when, I suppose, the vocal kind of thing reminded me a little bit of, almost Wild Beasts in a way, but a Wild Beast that didn't make me want to go out and set fire to things.
Less clattery.
Wild Beast!
Less,
there's just something about the whole... I appreciate that other people like them and it's my problem and not that. I cannot fucking bear Wild Beast. It's just something about them really winds me up. There is sort of more to it than that, and I can't quite put my finger on what it is. Sometimes you get a record that's utterly mainstream in its, intention, or even not its intention.
Also, sometimes, it's very easy to laugh at bands like Snow Patrol and Coldplay, and, why not? It's fun. But, sometimes they come out with a record that is genuinely brilliant, like Yellow or something. Mm. You just think, okay, you can laugh at Coldplay as much as you like, but that is a great track.
Rather than saying that's kind of, would we be laughing at it if it was kind of sold loads of records? I think if Coldplay and Snow Patrol didn't sell many records, we'd probably be hailing them a bit more than we do.
That's a very interesting point, isn't it?
Yeah,
that is. If it wasn't, because I was thinking this yesterday about Snow Patrol, because Snow Patrol was coming back with a new album. And I said, actually, there's a reason why a song like Run is like just a huge, a huge thing. And the reasons that I dislike it have to do, maybe kind of rock critic-y reasons, and because I think that shift in direction was very craven. I think there's something very craven about the whole thing. It's a very deliberate attempt to push people's buttons or all that kind of thing. Purely on sonic terms, purely as a song, that and Chasing Cars are probably really good, to me.
Well, I used to love the Reindeer section, which Gary Lightbody was part of, and that was basically the same kind of thing, but with a more DIY, scaled-down production.
So basically, we're too snobby, aren't
we? Basically, yeah.
We're far too snobby if they sell too much.
But I think when you get that big, you do flatten out some of the edges, and I thought his voice there, it reminded me of someone I couldn't quite grasp who it was, but there was something quite I don't know, quite unique about it.
Wasn't the guy from Athlete?
Yeah. One of the great, the soul greats.
Well, I will be really intrigued, actually, to hear what people, what listeners and commenters think about the Antlers. Are they, you know, are they a band that you really like? Are you going with this kind of wave of critical acclaim? Do you think it just sounds like Snow Patrol? Blah, 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 blah. Write in and let us know. Anyway, time for our next track. This is Miranda's Choice.
Stop looking through the halo. But carry on as if the time is through. You carry on as if I don't love you. And so we find the ways out to cut the heart out of the doubt now. The rooms full of us are empty. Like the letters never
sent. How Come You Never Go There? By Feist, Leslie Feist, from her forthcoming third album. Miranda, you brought this in.
I brought this in because I'm interviewing her and I kind of wanted to know what you thought. But because it's quite, it's obviously quite a low key single. That's, you know, it's not a massive, you know, put it
on. She doesn't really do.
No, she doesn't. But you know, there are some songs that she has done that might end up on an Apple ad.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
There are some that may not. And yeah. I would say that wouldn't. And I'm just kind of interested to see what you think of it. I mean, I think that it's like a record that could have come from any time, which is always quite interesting to me. That could have come from the 60s or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if we're listening to it obviously on earphones, and I don't want to sound too...
What high?
I want to say wanky, but like... But it sounds really... It's, you know, on earphones, the noises in it are really quite beautiful. And that's, you know, one of the reasons to like it. When you hear it over and over, it kind of worms its way in. So.
I am an unashamed fan of Feist. I really like both the previous albums. I think that if you were going to have a mainstream female singer-songwriter, I would much rather have someone who has kind of intriguing ideas, pulls in influences from out that, you know, isn't just standing there with an acoustic guitar looking mimsy and trying to sound
moaning
like on. Moaning on, banging on.
Moaning on like these women do.
Yeah, you know, but you know, and trying to sound like Joni Mitchell circa Song to a Seagull or whatever.
I can't possibly think who you might be talking about.
I have no idea. But, you know, I just think she's an interesting character. I also think she writes really good pop songs that are a bit more low-key. But I think the first album had Musha Boom on it, which is an amazing record. I think 1, 2, 3, 4, My Moon,
especially,
My Man.
Especially the Sesame Street version.
Yeah, she does great videos, all that kind of thing. There's a track on her last album called Brandy Alexander, which is lovely, just a beautiful
just great,
kind of early hours thing.
There's something funny about her, which is, it's a bit like Elbow, actually, weirdly, where you kind of think, okay, I really like, you know, there's elements of this band that I really, really like, but am I just being like a Ford Sierra driver? Is there something about this that's really mainstream? Have I missed...
And it's then like I kind of think, thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's don't, a and then you kind of, we're
yeah, yeah, don't, and then I kind of think, don't overanalyze it. It's actually really good.
Mm. I mean, she's definitely from quite an arty, strange background. She's part of, was she Broken Social Scene, I think she was in? And she hangs around with Gonzalez and Mocky.
So is she all right to like, then? She's credible, like.
Yeah,
she's
I first knew about her as being like Pete. Bitch's sidekick, and that's
She used to be called Bitch Lap Lap or something, didn't she? And she used to.
I never knew that's good. I like
she used
that.
To operate
that's great.
She used to operate a hand puppet while Peaches did her, singing about her fanny. Yeah. There are hidden, you know what I mean?
She's fluffed her muff. what do you think?
Don't know how to follow that. Yeah, no, I thought it's like you said, a bit like the Antlers thing. It's a slightly understated version of a mainstream sound. I was thinking almost like, because she's got quite a soulful voice, and it made me think of all the post-Winehouse stuff and, you know, Adele and stuff, and how it was nice to have something that didn't just lay it on so thick and was still very soulful and moving, but didn't just kind of get a trowel out and just,
We don't need any more of that kind of post. I mean, he's not doing it anymore. You know, that sort of post Mark Ronson kind of slathering on the Motown references production.
Yeah, but do you think that that's, again, because we are not 20-year-old women? You know, if you think about something like Adele, I mean, you know, obviously she's written some amazing songs and she's got a fantastic voice and all that. But if you're feeling a bit like, oh, you know, you can feel like she's just kind of really over-egging it. It's completely over-dramatic and passionate. But that's, you know, because she's 21. Ooh, fair enough, you
absolutely
know.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? We're talking about a lot of very mainstream stuff today, aren't we?
Well, it's September.
From Snow Patrol to Adele, yeah.
It's all coming out. It's the time.
So we all liked it, though. We all thought Feist was good.
Yeah, good.
We're thumbs up, general thumbs up for Feist. I'd like to hear the rest of the album. Actually, I haven't heard it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I've got it. It's, you know, well, she's good. Get it, is what I'd say.
Okay, so final track this week is from Tim. So trendying things up a bit. Enough of this talk of Adele and Snow Patrol and the rights and wrongs of Lycan Gelbo. That was Justice.
That was very good, wasn't
avec
it?
Avec audio video disco.
Trying to work out, is that even more trendy these days? I was starting to listen to it and thinking it's almost quite retro.
Quite behind the times.
Yeah. It sounded quite Bugglesy, didn't it? I liked it. It's the use of the piano, do you know what I mean? It's not like a kind of rave piano. But
it does sound a bit like the Buggles.
Yeah, it's great. Hurrah for that.
I went to see the Buggles live last year.
Yeah?
Oh, God.
Well,
because they come on and they do Video Killed the Radio Star. First thing they did, because they did their album in sequence. It's the first track on their album. Oh, and after that, it was, oh, man.
They saw Beyonce at Glastonbury and they thought, oh, just do your big hit. Yes. When it goes down the storm.
Tim, tell us, let's not talk... Well, I mean, we can talk about the Buggles in relation to Audio Video Disco by Justice. You brought it in. What do you like about it?
I like it. It reminds me of kind of those, you know, those early 70s electronic bands like Telex and...
Yeah.
It was kind of
Hot
that,
butter.
But then they've turned it stadium-sized in a way that a lot of indie records do. So I thought it was quite interesting they did that. I like the album, the new album they've got out. It's kind of more of the same.
Is it more pound and mash, as we say?
It's very much that kind of heavy metal disco.
Because there's a lot of that. I thought that sort of maximal dance sound was kind of on its way out a little bit.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the album, but I agree with that.
You think it's kind of an odd thing to do?
I think it's an interesting talking point. Like, is that actually even what... Is on the.
Is
you know,
it like
anyway.
When Bentley Rhythm Ace put their second album? And I remember we had it. I was editing Select, and we put it on. And as we were listening to it, the press officer rang up and said, "Oh, you heard the Bentley's album yet?" And he goes, "Oh, the one thing it isn't is novelty big beat." Right? And I put the phone down, and I was like, and somebody in the office, well, I said, "You said it's not novelty big beat." And somebody went, "The only way this could be more novelty big beat is if it had like a honking kind of car horn noise." And about 30 seconds later on the record, this honking car horn noise started. Is it? Do you think they might have missed the bus?
There's still going to be kind of festival crowds who are going to love this. And the songs are really good. You didn't hear the start, but it had that kind of almost ridiculous Rachmaninoff kind of, you know, arpeggios going on.
Okay.
And
also, that's quite interesting because that essentially, that when you said it, they cranked it up to a kind of stadium noise, which is exactly what they have done, really. And then that means that what they're playing is slightly to a different crowd, isn't it? So they're playing kind of a festival crowd rather than wanting to hear their tracks in a club, which is a slightly...
Yeah, I didn't
thing.
Hear this. There's like one or two songs where you could imagine dancing in a club.
Yeah,
the rest
it's not
of it
that
pure,
at all. It's
just,
a proper like let's jump that... up and down when we're slightly off our bonds kind of thing. That's exactly what you want to hear, isn't it?
It's sort of the same path that Daft Punk took, really, isn't it? I mean, Daft Punk went from being, you know, a sort of DJ duo. It used to be amazing DJ. I mean, this may still be. I haven't seen them for years, but I saw them at Back to Basics in Leeds many years ago, and they were fantastic, just DJing. But they became with Daft Punk about the live act, about, you know what I mean, about making music for huge spaces.
Yeah, like
Orbital
or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, they just, you know, there's some people that they want to do more than just, you know, put a track out that fills the floor. They want to go bigger.
And they did a tour film as well, didn't they? Justice. They did.
Did they?
Yes.
Yeah, and what was it like?
I haven't seen it.
It's no good bringing these things in when we haven't watched them. I'm hoping it was full of debauchery, but it may not.
I think some of it was supposed to be staged. I think that was the thing. It was very French in that sense. Oh, right. And there was bits where they were supposed to get arrested and da da da, da, and it was turned out it had all been staged. And,
oh, right. And then there's bits where they sat down for a 2-hour lunch and didn't do anything.
Yeah, it'd be amazing if they did. Somebody did a tour film and it was just endlessly sitting in boring, featureless rooms.
Wasn't that Radiohead's tour film?
Yeah, moaning about it. moaning. But you see, that's the thing. That's why you don't do, because it's the Radiohead film where it's like.
Yeah,
moaning about being famous. And who wants to hear that?
Yeah.
Then again, if it's Radiohead, you kind of expect it. You don't want to see Radiohead getting arrested and like, just puking up out of the bus.
So great, wouldn't it? With loads of groupies on their arm. Like, how fantastic.
They should totally do that.
Radiohead riding through some sort of town with Tom straddling the gun of a tank. You know?
Or they send in like kind of a massive effigy of him first.
Yeah, yeah.
Here he is. Tom, he's arrived.
Comes on stage. In a coffin.
Yeah.
And it bursts open and Tom York leaps out with a blonde wig on, smoking a big blunt like that guy at Funkadelic used to.
That's what we want.
Amazing. We've got all the ideas. Radiohead, give us a call. Come on, you need to spruce your image up. It's a bit dowdy. Get on the blower. Come on, get Stanley Donwood or whatever on the blower and we'll give him some pointers how to present your band. Is it a good album, the Justice album?
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
Excellent.
I don't mind being behind the times.
No, I don't. Well, I mean, you know, it's hipper than Adele. Yeah. Is it hipper than Adele? Is it hipper than what we're talking
That's
about?
That's the sticker
before?
On the
Stop
on the
worrying
sleeve.
About it. Sorry. We don't know.
I don't. Yeah, we neither know nor understand this
matter.
Sort of
it's
thing
good.
Anymore. People out there in internet land, if you think that Justice have had their day, or if you think this is just the beginning of bigger things for this band, and they will take it to a Daft Punk headlining Hyde Park kind of level, write in to the blog and let us know. This week on the Music Weekly blog, we've been streaming the new Laura Marling album. We referenced her obliquely, perhaps. Maybe I wasn't talking about Laura Marling. Maybe I was talking about somebody else.
Who?
I don't know. But maybe I was. I'm not telling you. I am an unknowable man. I'm not telling you who I was talking about. The new Laura Marling album is called A Creature I Don't Know. We've been asking for your comments. Largely positive, has to be said. Ditch Victim says, seriously, seriously, in italics, great.
That's Laura... a Simon Cowell answer, isn't it? Seriously, great.
She really made that song her own. You're like a young... Louis Walsh would keep saying that, wouldn't he? You're like a young... He said that.
Young Lenny Henry.
That was terrible. That was the worst one. No, the best one was when he said to Wagner, you're like a young Elton John. And it's like, Wagner's about the same bloody age as Elton John. You're just saying anything here. You don't know what you're talking about. Ditch Victim, who does know what he's talking about, says, Laura has such a quiet maturity, and these tracks feel like an immense struggle to escape from sadness with a tone and atmosphere that will endure.
That, to be honest, puts me off it. But like I have a friend who works in EMI who is not a massive fan of Laura Marling, and he said that he heard the album and thought it was absolutely amazing. So that did kind of stoke me up for it, really, because yeah. I think she's a very particular artist, isn't it? She's either you either absolutely love her or she kind of leaves you cold. And I have to say, she slightly leaves me cold. But having heard this album, having had it recommended so highly, I'm kind of looking forward to hearing her, really, to be honest.
Did she float your boat, Tim?
I think this album I found really quite depressing, actually, because when she first came out, I thought it wasn't totally my thing, but I thought you could see potential and you know, it felt like more of her in the music, like a young kind of teenage girl.
Yeah.
Whereas now it sounds like such a pastiche of 60s folk music, and Joni Mitchell particularly. Her voice is... I just can't listen to it. It just sounds like a joke to me.
Well, Daily83 on the blog disagrees with you. He says, love it. Her vocals are a little more Joni Mitchell in places, more so than on previous records. From first listen, it sounds like another fantastic record. And Tsietsi, I think that's how you pronounce it, commented, heavier and stuff, more mature, but it's still Laura Marling, yada. The Beast is...
yada at the
end. It does say yada. The Beast is definitely favourite track of the album. My favourite track on the album, I presume he means. Well...
That's told me.
That's you told.
Yeah. Right?
What are you?
Yada.
Yada, yada, yada to you. Yada, yada, yada. That's all we get from you, Tim. Laura came in to record a song exclusively for The Guardian earlier on, and here it is.
Oh, I have been wondering where I have been pondering, where I've been lately is no concern of yours. who's been touching my skin? Who have I been letting? Shy and tired-eyed am I today? Sometimes I sit, sometimes I stare. Sometimes they look and sometimes I don't care. Rarely I weep, sometimes I must. I'm wounded by death. For your woman up high, and when the bell tolls at your last day, you'll be getting down on your knees to pray. I'm a good woman and I never did say ever it was that you did that day. I'm not a woman to go and place blame, but you said that it was coming on judgment day. Now so your last day, you'll be getting down on your knees to pray. I'm a good woman and I never did say ever it was that you did that day. I'm not a woman to go and place blame, but you said that it was coming on judgment day. Now so
was the quiet maturity of Laura Marling there in an exclusive recording for Music Weekly. Her new album, A Creature I Don't Know, is released on 12th of September. That is all for now. My thanks to Miranda Sawyer and Tim Jones for coming in. We will be back next Friday. I'm Alexis Petridis. The programme is produced by Matt Hill. See you next week, Sensation Seekers.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.